He's recently been in Vegas, Sacramento, and Kansas City. Phoenix bound this week. Catch his work on the cover of the Register Guard sports page. Online, registerguard.com. Follow on Twitter, the handle at AustinMeekRG. Austin, how's it going?
Well, you know, when Donald Trump got elected, he told me I was going to get tired of all this winning. And I think he was right. It's been a lot of fun the last couple of weeks, but I got to say, with the Duck women and the Duck men making these runs, boy, I'm a little bit tired, but it's been fun.
Yeah, and you arrived with the for the 2014 run to the national championship by the football team, right?
That is true. This will be my second Final Four I've covered in two different sports for the Ducks.
Not bad. So the Ducks survived against Michigan. Dylan Ennis, in essence, did not follow instructions, played defense instead of fouling. It's then next up is Kansas, a half hour from Allen Fieldhouse, a raucous Jayhawk crowd. Heading in with how Kansas was playing, how would you gauge your level of surprise, if any, that the Ducks are actually able to win this game and not really be a nail biter?
Well, I was shocked by that part of it. I thought Oregon could win the game, but I figured if Oregon did win, it would be like a final possession type thing. I didn't think it was possible that Oregon really would dominate Kansas wire to wire. There was no point in that game where Kansas really was in control of it at all, or Oregon wasn't in control of it. So that part of it was surprising. Now, I thought there was a possibility, and I wrote this before the game, I thought there was a possibility that KU would come out a little tight. You know, I've been around Kansas basketball. I've seen that situation before. I just thought they're going to have all those fans in that building. The Elite Eight has been a hard game for Bill Self. He says exactly that. He says it's the hardest game of the tournament, and it certainly has been for Kansas because I believe they're now 2-5 in that game under Bill Self.
Amazing.
I thought that was possible, but I didn't think it was possible that Oregon would dominate the game the way they did.
Yeah, in your post-game article, you wrote that, you know, without Boucher on the road, and, you know, we could cite what's happened recently, ending that long streak at Arizona. How visible was it? You mentioned Kansas being a little tight, but that Oregon kind of embraced that silence the crowd mentality and really kind of, for lack of a better phrase, just kind of let it all hang out.
Well, they did. Yeah, they embraced the role of the villain. And Oregon plays that role pretty well. You know, those guys like that role. They ended Arizona's home court winning streak. They've had some big performances in hostile environments, so Oregon likes that role. And you saw that on their faces. You know, Tyler Dorsey, he looked like a little kid at Disneyland.
Yeah.
You know, he just had this big grin on his face the whole game. It's like they were just loving it. They were eating it up, how everybody was against them. And every time Tyler Dorsey would hit a big shot, you know, the crowd would go silent. And those guys just loved that. And I think that took Kansas off guard. You know, I've watched a lot of Kansas games over the years, and Kansas really does rely on intimidation. You know, a lot of the games they win them before tip-off because teams think, oh, we're playing Kansas. We can't hang with Kansas. But Oregon didn't think that way at any point. You know, Oregon obviously believed from the opening tip that they could win that game, and I think their confidence might have caught Kansas a little off guard.
Now, another thing you hit on, and the CBS guys mentioned it, playing on a lead that seemed kind of steady, 8, 10, 11 points, 5, 6 minutes to go. Oh, actually, I think you mentioned it on Twitter. You think maybe Oregon went a little conservative as far as milking the shot clock a little bit too early?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll be honest. If Kansas had somehow won that game, that would have been the storyline. Is what the heck were they doing the last 5-10 minutes? Oregon was pretty fortunate that Kansas just did not hit shots. If KU gets another couple 3-pointers to fall, I think that the momentum of that game could have changed because Oregon did have a stretch there where they just were not having good possessions offensively. I get that when you're ahead in the second half, you want to try to burn some clock. You don't want to let Kansas score quickly. But they weren't getting good shots at the end of the clock.
Nope.
In some cases, they weren't getting any shots. They weren't even getting a shot off. But the really big one was if I remember this right, you know, Tyler Dorsey misses a shot. Jordan Bell gets the offensive rebound. And then Dorsey ends up hitting a three that really kind of got them back to life after they'd had a bunch of bad possessions in a row. So they were pretty fortunate, I think, to get out of there with the win, because if Kansas had hit a couple shots in that stretch, it could have been a different game.
No, Dorsey's first shot went up with about 2:20 left. It went through two Kansas guys' hands just about
to Bell.
And when Dorsey hit it, it was 9 points, a minute 47 to go. And it was strange. It was like, oh, my God, here they come to – well, it's kind of over now, isn't it? Wasn't that kind of a strange twist of fate right there?
Well, it's been the story of this tournament for Oregon that Jordan Bell is just in the right place at the right time when Oregon needs him. I mean, same thing against Rhode Island, a couple of huge offensive rebounds that, you know, it was a good effort to get the rebound, but at the same time, the ball had to come off at the right angle for that long rebound to end up with Jordan Bell. And, you know, maybe that's some years it's meant to be, and maybe that's just a sign that it was meant to be for Oregon this year, that every time they've needed a big rebound, Jordan Bell has been there, and every time they've needed a big shot, Tyler Dorsey has made it.
Yeah, there was also the follow against Michigan by Bell off the Ennis miss. He's just amazing. Mm-hmm. Talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard, little theory I want to test here. So Boucher gets hurt. And in the Pac-12 title game against Arizona, Iona and Rhode Island, the first games of this tournament, the defense was impacted. All those teams shot over 50%. Better against Michigan, about 44. Kansas under 40. And I get there was some shots missed. But any logic that once Boucher went out, maybe a few games and practices is what they needed to adjust to not having him because the defense has gotten better?
Well, I think that's absolutely true. They have adjusted to Chris Boucher being hurt. The first game they played without him, you could tell that they just, you know, they didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to play without him. And gradually they've found some answers there. Yeah, the biggest answer seems to be, well, Jordan Bell's just going to put on the Superman cape and do everything. I mean, the game against Kansas was as dominant a game as I've seen a guy play without scoring a bunch of points. I mean, Jordan Bell dominated that game. Every time Kansas drove in the paint, you could tell, you know, they were thinking about Jordan Bell. Even if Jordan Bell wasn't in the game, they were thinking about him. I mean, that's the effect that he had. He changed and altered so many shots in the paint. You know, and it really changed the way I think Kansas wants to play. Because deep down, Bill Self, he wants to score the ball at the rim. He doesn't like shooting a bunch of three-pointers.
Right.
But they had to shoot a bunch, and they didn't make any. So Kansas was just completely lost offensively because they couldn't really get to the basket outside of Frank Mason, and the shots weren't falling from the outside, so they didn't know where to go.
Yeah, I think for the rest of their lives, if you snuck up behind those guys and went, Jordan Bell, they would develop like a nervous twitch.
Yeah, really.
But we were talking about Kentucky and North Carolina, who would be a more formidable matchup for Oregon. The Tar Heels have that size, which has sometimes given the Ducks trouble, but also Oregon presents issues for the Tar Heels. In this particular game, I know UNC is favored by about 5. Do you see a big edge either way, or with how Oregon's playing, how North Carolina's playing, toss-up time again?
Yeah, I mean, as I wrote after the KU game, if Oregon can beat Kansas in Kansas City, they can beat anybody in this tournament. They're not going to be intimidated by North Carolina. Now, it is a different kind of matchup because North Carolina does have size and they have depth inside, which is something that Kansas didn't really have. I believe North Carolina is the number one offensive rebounding team in the country. That's going to be a challenge. You know, they're going to throw some things at Oregon that Oregon hasn't seen since Chris Boucher went down. And I think you could make a case that, you know, this is the game where Oregon will miss Boucher more than any other that they've played. But the flip side of that, I do think Oregon has advantages on North Carolina on the perimeter. You know, with Barry being a little banged up, and I'm not sure that Carolina has the depth on the perimeter as some other teams that Oregon has faced. So I think that's an advantage. I look at it as being, basically a toss-up game. You know, if you give me 5 points for the Ducks, I'll probably take it because I, Yeah, I think flip a coin on this one.
All right, let's get to the other game, Gonzaga, South Carolina. For years, many have harped on Mark Few, like me, a great coach, awful conference. Well, they're there. They caught a bit of a break. I guess they played an 11 seed because West Virginia pushed them to the wire. And I know you have a piece on Coach Few coming up, but can we officially say Tannen and people like you shut up now? He's made the Final Four.
Well, I'll leave that to your discretion. hey, you got time to fill on the radio, so I won't hold anything against you. For me, you know, I think I look at Gonzaga and say, hey, what a great testament to perseverance and loyalty for Mark Few. You know, he's had so many opportunities to go to bigger jobs and bigger programs and places where, you know, it's probably easier to get to a Final Four than it is at Gonzaga. But he felt like, hey, there's no job out there that's better than the job I have. And that's, you know, that's been borne out in what Gonzaga's done this year. You know, he proved that you can make a Final Four at Gonzaga. You can be a number one seed. And, you know, you're right. Their path to the Final Four, you know, they caught a couple breaks in there. I would have liked to see the game if Gonzaga had played Arizona. But, hey, Xavier beat Arizona fair and square, and Gonzaga took it to Xavier to get to the Final Four, so they've earned their spot there. And you feel good for Mark Few, who, you know, grew up down the road in Crestwell.
Yep.
And really had to, you know, had to earn his way there, and it's a cool story to see him finally get there.
Yeah, it's one of those times where, like, first of all, stunner I'm wrong, but kind of happy about it in the long run. Let's wrap with this for Austin Meek of the Register Guard. The Oregon women ran into the buzzsaw of buzzsaws. But, you know, you look at that team, they snuck past Temple. They were just better than Duke and Maryland. They're in the Elite Eight, year three under Kelly Graves. I mean, UConn is easily the most forgivable loss ever. So what we saw this season, I mean, was this just nothing short of brilliance? And more importantly, look out for this program moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the way they were playing, I would have given them a chance against just about anybody in the country except UConn.
Yeah.
UConn's the team you say, okay, doesn't matter what kind of role you're on, this is a different animal here playing UConn. But I think that, you know, I think this experience is really good for Oregon in a lot of ways. You know, and I remember talking to Kelly Graves before the tournament, and the subject of UConn came up, and he kind of embraced the fact that, you know, the rest of the women's game needs to catch up to UConn. Somebody needs to step up and eventually beat UConn. And Oregon's obviously a ways away from that now based on the outcome of the game yesterday. But when you look at the future of this team, I think the experience of playing UConn on that stage will be really valuable. And I think everybody on that team will remember that experience. And two or three years down the road, if they play UConn again, you know, I think having that experience will be very helpful for them. And I could, you know, I'm not going to sit here and predict that Oregon is somehow going to get to the UConn level in the next few years, but I think they can close the gap. You know, I'll predict this. If Oregon and UConn play in the tournament again in the next few years, I think it'll be a lot closer game than it was yesterday.
Yep, somebody said 100% of the points scored by the Duck women in the tournament and rebounds are all coming back. So that's just spectacular.
Thought.
All right, hey, great stuff, Austin. I may cross paths with you down in Phoenix. So,
oh, are you going down?
Yes, I am. We just learned about this late yesterday. So, my friend, consider yourself forewarned.
I will be on alert at all times.
Hey,
on the lookout.
Hey, travel safe, Austin. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Take it easy.